Let's all please rise. Kind Father in heaven, we come before you on this Sabbath day, a day where we can rest from the labors of the world, where we can come before you and honor you in all we do in praise and in study. And we pray, Almighty Yahweh, that you'll be with each of us as we go through this day, as we focus our thoughts and our attentions on you. We thank you, Father, for getting us through another season of waywardness, and we ask that you continue to help us stay on that narrow pathway, no matter what the obstacles and what the problems we might encounter, for we know that through the strength of your Spirit we can do this. We pray, Almighty Yahweh, that you'll bless those who have asked for special prayer, as we have noted, and that they might seek you and understand you as Yahweh Rapha, the healer of all our infirmities and all our trials. We thank you now, and we ask that you continue through this service to bless us and watch over us, guide our miles and our thoughts, that we might be your people as we come before you on your Sabbath, and we search our hearts, that we might come and know that you are the one who guides each of us, and that we need to honor you in all that we do as we leave here and go out into the world. And this prayer and petition now we ask through Yahshua's name. Hallelujah. You may be seated. The Sabbath is one of the few that you'll ever encounter where the world will be resting from its regular practices. Pretty amazing, isn't it? For all the wrong reasons, of course, but because Yahshua was never in this day of Noel, or as one brother says, Noel. But hallelujah, we got the Sabbath, and it's really kind of nice driving down the road and seeing everything closed, practically, you know, and not much action out there on the highway. Thomas Edison, the master inventor and creator of the working incandescent light bulb and 1,091 other inventions, was once asked whether he got discouraged, having failed 186 times to perfect the light bulb. He said, "No. I learned 186 ways how not to develop a light bulb." What a terrific attitude. What perseverance this man had. If you look at the lives of great men who made a mark in history, one characteristic you'll find in each one of them is an uncommon self-discipline, a commitment to a cause, and a drive, uncommon drive. Extraordinary drive to make it happen, no matter what the odds or the difficulty. Edison, again, once said that success or genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. Anything worth anything takes a lot of self-discipline to achieve. To have the drive to keep plugging away, you know, no matter what the odds are or the difficulties, is a characteristic of great, great men, great achievement. But such a characteristic doesn't happen just naturally. Each of us must work at self-discipline. Laziness is a lack of self-discipline, and laziness leads to mediocrity and failure. We can see that in our world all around us. That's common today. And today I'd like to help us all to become maybe a little more self-disciplined, because it'll help us become better followers of Yahshua the Messiah. Every movement in history that ever amounted to anything had a spark plug, an individual or individuals behind it who were there pushing and never giving up and working at their goal. Yahweh chose people who would make things happen, whether it's Moses bringing the children of Israel through that barren desert in that difficult time and battling at the same time the enemies that were following them. Whether it's strong kings of Judah like Asa, or Joash, or Hezekiah, or Josiah. These men who were there, who turned back to Yahweh, even when their fathers were evil, and turned the people around again. Interesting, you don't find any good kings in the northern 10 tribes, but you find 8 of them in the southern tribes of Judah and Benjamin. Yahshua, of course, is our best example, setting the example for us, setting forth a new covenant while battling the establishment of his day, the religious leaders who would just loved to have done him in at any moment. Paul taking the second covenant to the Gentile world, and at the same time taking heat and enduring the attacks of the ruling elite from his own religious establishment. Each of these individuals possessed unsurpassed drive and a discipline, an unwavering discipline that kept them going. Each sacrificed their present wants for something vastly more important, and nothing could change their resolve. They were there day in, day out, continuing on. They had a vision, and it directed everything they did. You know, great things don't happen without determination, which can be just as important as any, you know, brilliant stroke or flash of genius, or any single moment that just happened to work in our favor. You can't focus that discipline, that determination, I should say, without self-discipline, which I hope to show is a biblical virtue and a strength each of us needs to cultivate in our own lives. Without self-discipline, working in conjunction with Yahweh's Spirit, we couldn't fulfill what Yahweh has set out for us. Think of self-discipline as a computer without an operating system. You know, computers can do wonderful things. They're just amazing, complex system that will just sit there unless it's given direction. It has potential to do, you know, so many things, a wide range of things: scientific calculation, artistic design, communication, all sorts of different things, even taking you down the information superhighway. But it's just a huge bundle of memory cells unless there's something behind it guiding it and pushing it along. A computer without an operating system is like a believer without discipline. He's got a lot of potential. He can do many things, but he just sits there and doesn't get anything done because he has no discipline behind it. He's all caught up in the problems of life, and he can't get his life in order. We have all this hope of changing to improve and to grow spiritually, but in reality, we're not going to go very far if our own life is not well ordered and disciplined. Self-discipline is best defined as the ability to regulate one's conduct by principle and sound judgment rather than by impulse, desire, or social custom. Most people simply react to life. You go out and you look at the world and they're just there. You know, whatever life does, that's what they do. Whatever is pushed upon them or whatever, that's what they do. They just drift along day after day, reacting like a billiard ball being bounced around from side to side, corner to corner, until finally it ends up in a pocket somehow, just by chance. Most people are that way. They turn on the TV each night, and they spend the entire evening being spoon-fed whatever slosh Hollywood throws at them. Without self-discipline, they habitually will stay up late, can't get up in the morning, go to work because they're too tired. Their well-being suffers for lack of rest. They don't take control of their health, but they gorge themselves on whatever tastes good rather than what's nutritious for them. They lack the discipline it takes to save regularly, and therefore they live so close to the paycheck that when difficulty strikes, which it does for all of us, it only compounds the problem. Recent news reports say that the present young adult generation in this nation is in more debt than in any previous group of people in history. And sadly, the undisciplined don't want to and don't plan to make any changes, so they just keep struggling along in that same old debt and the same old rut with little hope of getting out of it. Living a self-disciplined life is going to lessen your problems. And the more you do, the more abundance and the more happiness you're going to have. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 6. Chapter 6 and verse 6 is the old proverb of the ant. We all remember that one. What can we learn from the ant? Well, we can learn a lot. 6 verse 6, go to the ant, you sluggard. Who is a sluggard? Somebody who doesn't have much discipline in his life. Consider her ways and be wise. Now, it's almost a commentary and a sad commentary that we have to go to one of the smallest little things, smallest little living things, to get some lessons on life. Here we're supposed to be, so much more intelligent and advanced, and yet he says, go to the ant. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provides her meat in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you sleep, O sluggard? When will you arise out of your sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. This is just someone without any drive, without any ambition. All he wants to do is sleep. So shall your poverty come as one that travails. Traveleth. I got the wrong word there. Can't read that. And they want as an armed man. Your poverty will come. Your poverty will come. Key phrase, the man who has no guide, overseer, or ruler. There's nothing in his life that's guiding him. This one, this ant, who has nothing guiding, still proceeds on. Proceeds on because it's got drive and self-discipline. Still makes sure business is taken care of. And the future is still being prepared for. Have you ever seen ants in a colony standing around doing nothing, leaning on a shovel, sitting over in a corner playing solitaire, you know? You ever seen them doing that? Go to an ant colony sometime, just watch them. It's a beehive of activity, and I'm not mixing metaphors accidentally because beehives are the same way. They're busy. Everybody's busy in those little colonies or beehives. And they're all working. They're all working to perpetuate the colony. They're so self-disciplined that those little critters will continue their Yahweh-given duty day in and day out until their final step and they, you know, keel over and die. A lack of self-discipline is a prime characteristic of what the psalmist calls the sluggard. Brethren, it takes self-discipline to be a follower of Yahshua the Messiah. To obey him in this world, we need a lot of self-discipline. Have you ever seen a ragtag, disorganized, unguided, undirected army go out and win a war? They're not going to go anywhere, are they? Well, we're in a spiritual battle, and we have to be prepared for that battle. Without discipline, the true seeker will end up a sluggard, defeated. Without self-discipline, he won't take the initiative to teach his family Yahweh's word. Without self-discipline, he himself won't maintain weekly Sabbath study and prayer, but allow other interests to pull him away and just waste his day. He won't prepare for the feast, but rather, when the time comes, offer up excuses why he can't attend. He'll fritter away his income on foolish things and then contend he can't afford to tithe. Did you know that the most dedicated contributors and tithers are by and large those who are on the lower income levels? And that's common throughout our society, and it's been proven so. But just because one's income isn't high doesn't mean that Yahweh's left out of your life. You can't give back to Yahweh. It just means your spending is under control, no matter how much you make or how much you don't make. And you make sure Yahweh receives his due before you exhaust the disposable income you have left. Biblically, self-discipline stems from an overwhelming desire to obey, and that's what we're all looking at. We're looking at a desire to follow Yahweh. If we want to, we will discipline our lives to do so. To stay within the bounds of Yahweh's law, and the more you do that, the more discipline you'll have in your life. It's kind of like a symbiotic relationship. One affects the other. One feeds on the other and supports the other. You have discipline because you're wanting to be obedient. You're wanting to be obedient, and so you discipline your life. If you truly want to obey Yahweh, the one you worship, then you need a life that is under control. Let's turn to Proverbs 31. I'm going to read this in the Jerusalem Bible. This is the proverb of the virtuous wife. This is they call it an acrostic psalm. Each sentence begins with a new letter, a consecutive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. But it says, a perfect wife, who can find her? She is far beyond the price of pearls. Her husband's heart has confidence in her. From her he will derive no little benefit, profit. Advantage and not hurt she brings him all the days of her life. She is always busy with wool and with flax. She does her work with eager hands. She is like a merchant vessel bringing her food from far away. She gets up while it's still dark, giving her household their food, giving orders to her serving girls. She sets her mind on a field and then she buys it. With what her hands have earned, she plants a vineyard. She puts her back into her work and shows how strong her arms can be. She finds her labor well worthwhile. Her lamp does not go out at night. She sets her hands to the distaff and her fingers grasp the spindle. Are we getting a picture here of somebody who's sitting around doing nothing? My goodness, from morning till before the sun comes up, she's already at it. And when she's done, she's still at it. She's working with something else after she goes out and, you know, buys fields and plants vineyards and work. And here she is, still working. Now she's working on a different project. She holds out her hand to the poor and she opens her arms to the needy. Snow may come. She has no fears for her household with all her servants warm and clothed. She makes her own quilts. She's dressed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gates, taking his seat among the elders of the land. She weaves linen sheets and sells them. She supplies the merchant with sashes. She is clothed in strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. When she opens her mouth, she does so wisely. On her tongue is kindly instruction. She keeps good watch on the conduct of her household. No bread of idleness for her. Her sons stand up and proclaim her blessed. Her husband, too, sings her praises. Many women have done admirable things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty empty. The woman who is wise is the one to praise. Give her a share in what her hands have worked for, and let her works tell her praises at the city gates. Beautiful commentary on someone who possesses a good deal of self-discipline. The virtuous woman. Well, since self-discipline is so important, how do we develop it? What do we do? If we don't have it, or don't have much of it, what can we do to improve upon our walk? How can parents teach this virtue to their children? Well, one of the best ways is, in many things, is to start small. You know, if you go to memorize something, maybe you want to memorize the Bible, you don't take whole books and, you know, try to read through and memorize everything at one time. You start small and you work at it. Clean your room when you're at home or your desk at work. Get into the habit of putting things where they belong when they're out of place, you know? If you see a piece of scrap on the floor, pick it up rather than walk on it all day long. Teach your children to have a sense of order in their surroundings. Put things away when you're done using them, so you always know where they are the next time you need them. Hang up jackets when you get home. All these things tell us of a disciplined life. You know, clutter can be a downer and can even be a hazard. That's why I stay out of my office over there, because until the assembly gets its books put away, it's a mess, and it's depressing to go in there. Laziness is no virtue. It just leads to more laziness. So we got to overcome the laziness. Sometimes you just have to force yourself to do it. The more you force yourself to do it, the more you do it. Make orderliness matter in your life, and even your habits will begin to reflect an order. Your time will be spent better as you begin to take control, and you'll get more done in a day, which will make you feel good, and that'll make you want to do more, and that'll make you like the virtuous woman. You know, it just builds on itself. But you sit around and squalor and think about things and never do anything, you think, man, it just perpetuates itself. You never get out of the rut. You have to force yourself sometimes. You'll begin to take hold of life rather than have life manipulate you. Learn how to keep your environment clean and clear so you can get more done without all the distractions, you know. It's hard for me to sit home on the Sabbath and just sit there and not do anything, because I'd look around and I think, you know, the picture over there needs to be straightened up, or you know, a little bit of dirt over there. I wonder if I should, you know, and you start getting distracted. It takes self-discipline to get into the Bible and say, okay, I'm putting all that stuff out of my mind and I'm going to focus on Yahweh. And that takes a little bit of discipline, but you can do it. Keep your environment orderly, and that will help you keep orderly in your thoughts and in your actions. Deal immediately with things like the mail. Instead of holding it, you know, throwing it off in a corner, so I'll get to it later, you know, start going through it. As soon as you get it, and get rid of it. Get rid of the clutter, the junk mail, and so on. Declutter your life. Learning self-discipline in the little things will help you train you for the big stuff. And on the other hand, those who are undisciplined in the small matters are going to be undisciplined in the things that are important as well. It just follows. Solomon says it's the little foxes that ruin the vineyards. Songs of Solomon 2:15. And when it comes to a person's character, there aren't any small issues, you know. Organize what you do each day. Have a to-do list in your head, or preferably on paper, and then refer to it. That takes a little bit of effort. I don't know. Some might say, oh, fool around with a little piece of paper. Hey, try it, and then work at it. You know, companies have classes in organizing their employees to get their employees to do things in an orderly way. They even have little organizers, little planning books. You know, you put everything in there, and you organize your day. I worked with a fellow one time who did that. Came to work, he'd get his little piece of paper, and he'd sit down, and he'd figure out all the things he had to do that day, and he'd write everything down. And I'd watch him, and then he'd go through the day, start scratching them off. The important things first, because if you wait till the last, you may never get to them, and that's even worse. So he'd go ahead, and he'd you know, scratch them down, scratch it off as he completed them. By the end of the day, he had it all done. Thought, wow, that's pretty neat. I was jumping around from one task to another, not getting anything done, not finishing anything, and I felt like, you know, I couldn't do anything. This guy was orderly, and he got a lot done, and that's important. He got far more done than I did, jumping from one uncompleted project to another. It's all about self-discipline. It starts with the discipline to make a list in the first place, and while you think about what needs to be done, is also a little bit of discipline in an orderly way. It takes a little effort, but then the advantages are going to be well worth it. The simple fact is, if you don't control your time, everything else will. Another way we can learn self-discipline is don't constantly seek to be entertained. When you have free time, do things that are productive instead of just seeking entertainment. Learn to entertain yourself with things that are challenging and stimulating and creative. Hobbies, reading, education, stimulate your mind, and you'll even protect yourself against Alzheimer's if you do. Studies have shown that an active mind is a defense against that disease. The average book, did you know, the average book of the Bible is no more than one newspaper page. So if you can read a newspaper, you can read a book of the Bible in that same amount of time. Imagine your biblical knowledge if you did that every day. Spend as much time reading the scriptures as you do the newspaper and other secular material. All it takes is a little discipline, sticking to a regular schedule. I was amazed when I learned that the brethren in the Philippines get up at 4 in the morning, and you go out there, and they're in their Bibles, and they're reading their Bibles. It's still dark. They got their candles or their lamps out there, and they're reading away. And they put every one of us to shame in what they know about the scriptures. It's all it takes is a little discipline. A good use of time. Another key to self-discipline is to be on time. If you're supposed to be somewhere at a specific time, then be there. Punctuality is a characteristic of a responsible person who has his life under control. And being on time also shows love and respect to the other people and the value of their time. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15, Paul said something about time, and kind of tying these two ideas together, well, look what he says in verse 16 of Ephesians 5. Each of these things is important to develop the right kind of character that we need to follow in the footsteps of Yahshua and not be slack in any way. 5:16 says, redeem the time because the days are evil. Redeem the time. I recall an elder who was always late for services. Always. You could count on it. He'd always be late. He and his family walk in 5 minutes late. Services were at 10 o'clock. He'd walk in at 10:05 every Sabbath. If we change the meeting time to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'll guarantee you he'll be there at 3:05 when the services have started, and here he comes walking in, disrupting everything. That doesn't show any love for brethren. Get up a little earlier. Get up 5 minutes earlier and be there on time. It's not hard. Discipline, self-discipline. Another thing you can do is keep your word. If you say you're going to do something, do it. When you said you would do it, and how you said you would do it, do it. Before you make a commitment, make sure you can see it through, or don't make the commitment. Don't make promises you can't keep. This is a huge problem in our world, especially in the business world. You get promises from people, oh, I'll be there, I'm coming. You wait, and you wait, and they never show up. Call them next day, oh, well, I had something going on, and didn't give you an excuse, didn't give you any reason, didn't call you saying I couldn't come. They just don't show up. That's a big problem in our world. People lie all the time. They'll say they'll do this and that, and they never intend to follow through. And that's bearing false witness, let alone what it does to your image in the eyes of others. So keep your word. That's part of being self-disciplined. A self-disciplined person with Yahweh's Spirit will either make sure to keep his or her promise or won't make the promise in the first place. Another thing we can do is finish what we start. There's a home near my wife's hometown in Pennsylvania that has this scaffolding up against the side of the house, and it's been that way for 20 years. Landis remembers. That's an extreme example of an unfinished building project. I could never figure it out, but it's still there. I bet it's there now. You go there, there it is, scaffolding up against the wall, and it looks awful, and I don't know what people think about it. They've probably got so used to it. But many of us, you know, in a figurative sense, still have our scaffolding up against the wall. We intend to do this. We intend to do that. We never get to it. We never finish it. Some people's lives are just a collection of incomplete undertakings. You know, they start something and drop it and go on to something else. Never getting anything done. Never completing it. When all you see looking out at your personal landscape is a clutter, just a mess of unfinished projects, unfulfilled, intense, it really draws you down. When you get something completed, you look back and think, wow, I feel good, I got that done. I remember growing up, my grandfather was a carpenter. And we'd drive through town, and he'd say, see that house over there? I built that. See that garage over there? I did that. Go down and see that roof? I put that roof on, 10 years ago. Look at it, it's still there. He felt accomplishment in having done that. And we do. The Bible says there's nothing better than to get something done and complete it and feel good about what you've accomplished. Proverbs, I believe, say that. When all you see looking out is, you know, a bunch of half-finished things, it's a downer. And that just perpetuates itself. Leaving things undone become missed opportunities, what they amount to. In a poem he titled Maud Muller, John Greenleaf Whittier once wrote, "For all sad words of tongue and pen, the saddest are those it might have been." It might have been. You know, one thing you can't bring back is a neglected opportunity, something that you missed. Another thing we can do is accept correction. Correction helps you develop self-discipline because it shows where you can improve. And it's a good exercise in humility. We all know people who will never admit they're wrong and never accept correction. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 15. But to be able to say, hey, you know, I was wrong, it does something in your heart. And it humbles you. And this is what Yahweh would like to see. He'd like to see a humble person who's willing to say, I was wrong and I'll, you know. Someone comes against you for something you've done, you know, and they're all hot and bothered and, you know, they want vengeance. All you have to say is, I'll try harder next time. I'll do better next time. What can they say? Okay. Fine, I'm happy, you know. And then, do better next time if you are at fault. Proverbs 15:31. The ear that hears the reproof of life abides among the wise. If you've done something wrong and, you know, even if no one calls it to your attention, but you know it's wrong because it didn't work out, you're wise if you understand and learn by the mistake. He that refuses instruction despises his own soul, but he that hears reproof gets understanding. Wise person. The fear of Yahweh is the instruction of wisdom, and before honor is humility. Be willing to accept correction. Psalm chapter 19, verse 20 says, "Hear counsel and receive instruction that you may be wise in the latter end." It doesn't do any good to fight it and to argue and, you know, put blame on somebody else. What's that going to accomplish? It's not going to accomplish anything. The key to self-discipline, really what it all boils down to, is self-denial. We're in a culture that practices self-indulgence, aren't we? And whatever its people want, they want it, and they want it now. They gorge themselves this time of year on holiday goodies because they can't say no to their taste buds. They can't walk by the cake and not grab a bunch. And then come January, they want that weight loss program. You're going to hear all about that in another week. All over the place. You know, lose those unwanted, ugly pounds that you picked up during the holidays. They want it both ways because they lack self-control and self-discipline. They want a quick fix. Say no to those harmful impulses. Occasionally deny yourself. This is how we learn self-discipline. Deny yourself some pleasures that are maybe legitimate. Something you'd like, maybe enjoy. Skip dessert. Just show your body you're in control. Drink a glass of iced tea instead of a Coke. You know, do something good for your body. Have some dark chocolate instead of that fattening sweet chocolate. You get all those cancer-fighting flavonoids, you know, in the process. Remind your body who's in charge. And you'll be surprised at how good it feels to take control of your health. Welcome responsibility. There's a brother here who took a job of management over a less responsible position that paid better because of the opportunity it gave him to develop his leadership skills. And I think that's admirable. That's great. My father, who was not born with a silver tongue in public speaking, when I was growing up, I remember attended a breakfast Toastmasters club to learn how to hone his speaking skills. And he pushed me, an introverted high school kid who had, you know, was scared to death to stand up in front of a group, especially a group of adults, but he pushed me to go along with him on occasion. And as much as I dreaded it, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. I learned so much, even though I hated it. And I always tried to get out of it. Self-discipline means setting aside your own desires, your own impulses, and your own fears to reach a higher goal, a more important goal. Each one of us should look for ways to become movers and shakers and not just sit back passively like sheep in life. We're called to a great purpose, and we can't accomplish what Yahweh wants by never standing up to the plate, by being so bogged down and just living that we can't accomplish anything for Yahweh. It's difficult, and it keeps holding us back, and we never get out of the rut. A believer soon learns in life that it's not just about him. He is to live and sacrifice for others. We find Yahshua admonishing that in Matthew chapter 16. And that's one of the things that we learn early on, is that to follow in the footsteps of Yahshua, you have to live like Yahshua. You have to have the same outlook as he did. And his outlook was never on himself. You ever see Yahshua complaining about, "Man, I don't know where I'm going to sleep tonight. I just don't have the money. I can't get a motel. What am I going to do?" He just went out and laid down somewhere. I don't know. Found a friend, found a brother, slept in his house, you know, whatever it took. He wasn't concerned about things like that. He was concerned about getting the message to the people. Matthew 16, verse 24. "Then said Yahshua unto his disciples, If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his burden and follow me. For whosoever will save his life," in other words, whosoever will live for himself, trying to, you know, get all the gusto they can, "shall lose it. And whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it." We're not put on this planet to enjoy, you know, all our the things it has to offer and go for all the satisfying gusto that we can grab. We're in training for a position in the kingdom. We're in training now to be leaders, to be guides to others. So we need to learn that now, how to do that. Paul in 1 Corinthians 9 shows how self-discipline worked in his life toward a greater goal. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 25. And every man that strives for the mastery is temperate in all things. He's not extravagant. He doesn't go with extremes. He's temperate. He's reasoned and he's self-disciplined in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. Therefore, so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beats the air, but I keep my body and bring it under subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. He lived a disciplined life. And he showed self-discipline in all he did. We can start training right now for that position by becoming more responsible and self-disciplined in our daily activities. Get involved in the assembly. Volunteer for things. We'll force you to get organized and develop the discipline that will not only strengthen your character, but make you more productive in your life in Yahshua. These are just practical suggestions, brethren. On first blush, you might say, what's that got to do with spiritual things? Well, you can't divide your life into secular and religious. It's all one for the true believer. One impacts the other. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 10:31, whatever you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of Yahweh. Yahshua first had to heal the sick before they could start following him, right? Once you have self-discipline under control, you'll find things work much better. You'll find things like fasting is much easier because you've got things under control. It's not a big deal. You find sacrificing in various ways much easier. You're no longer slave to yourself, your appetites, your pocketbook, your personal wants, whatever it might be. And that's what it's all about, to giving up, sacrificing for the kingdom of Yahweh. So I hope that these few words will help you and guide us all, that we become a little more disciplined in the way we approach Yahweh's word and approach life itself, because without it, we're just going to sit there and spin. We're not going to get anywhere. May Yahweh bless you.